The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 1, The Yoga of Divine Works. Continuing with Chapter 8, The Supreme Will. Mid-page 213. The total surrender, then, of all our actions to a supreme and universal will, an unconditioned and standardless surrender of all works to the government of something eternal within us, which will replace the ordinary working of the ego nature, is the way and end of Karma Yoga. But what is this divine supreme will? And how can it be recognized by our deluded instruments and our blind, prisoned intelligence? Ordinarily, we conceive of ourselves as a separate I in the universe that governs a separate body and mental and moral nature, chooses in full liberty its own self-determined actions, and is independent and therefore sole master of its works and responsible. It is not easy for the ordinary mind, the mind that has not thought nor looked deeply into its own constitution and constituents. It is difficult even for minds that have thought, but have no spiritual vision and experience, to imagine how there can be anything else in us truer, deeper, and more powerful than this apparent I and its empire. But the very first step towards self-knowledge, as towards the true knowledge of phenomena, is to get behind the apparent truth of things and find the real but masked essential and dynamic truth which their appearances cover. This ego, or I, is not a lasting truth, much less our essential part. It is only a formation of nature, a mental form of thought centralization in the perceiving and discriminating mind, a vital form of the centralization of feeling and sensation in our parts of life, a form of physical conscious reception centralizing substance and function of substance in our bodies. All that we internally are is not ego, but consciousness, soul, or spirit. All that we externally and superficially are and do is not ego, but nature. An executive cosmic force shapes us and dictates through our temperament and environment and mentality, so shaped through our individualized formulation of the cosmic energies, our actions, and their results. Truly, we do not think, will, or act, but thought occurs in us. Will occurs in us. Impulse and act occur in us. Our ego sense gathers around itself, refers to itself all this flow of natural activities. It is cosmic force. It is nature that forms the thought, imposes the will, imparts the impulse. Our body, mind, and ego are a wave of that sea of force in action and do not govern it, but by it are governed and directed. The sadhaka, in his progress towards truth and self-knowledge, must come to a point where the soul opens its eyes of vision and recognizes this truth of ego and this truth of works. He gives up the idea of a mental, vital, physical I that acts or governs action. He recognizes that Prakriti, force of cosmic nature following her fixed modes, is the one and only worker in him, and in all things and creatures. But what has fixed the modes of nature? Or who has originated and governs the movements of force? There is a consciousness, or a conscient, behind, that is the Lord, witness, knower, enjoyer upholder, and source of sanction for her works. This consciousness is soul, or Purusha. Prakriti shapes the action in us. Purusha in her or behind her witnesses, assents, bears, and upholds it. Prakriti forms the thought in our minds. Purusha in her or behind her knows the thought and the truth in it. Prakriti determines the result of the action. Purusha in her or behind her enjoys or suffers the consequence. Prakriti forms mind and body, labors over them, develops them. Purusha upholds the formation and evolution and sanctions each step of her works. Prakriti applies the will force which works in things and men. Purusha sets that will force to work by his vision of that which should be done. This Purusha is not the surface ego, but a silent self, a source of power, an originator and receiver of knowledge behind the ego. Our mental eye is only a false reflection of this self, this power, this knowledge. This Purusha, or supporting consciousness, is therefore the cause, recipient, and support of all nature's works. But he is not himself the doer. Prakriti, nature force, in front, and Shakti, conscious force, soul force behind her, for these two are the inner and outer faces of the Universal Mother, account for all that is done in the universe. The Universal Mother, Prakriti Shakti, is the one and only worker. Purusha Prakriti, consciousness force, soul supporting nature, for the two even in their separation are one and inseparable, are at once a universal and a transcendent power. But there is something in the individual too which is not the mental ego, something that is one in essence with this greater reality. It is a pure reflection or portion of the one Purusha. It is the soul person or the embodied being, the individual self, Jivatman. It is the self that seems to limit its power and knowledge so as to support an individual play of transcendent and universal nature. In deepest reality, the infinitely one is also infinitely multiple. We are not only a reflection or portion of that, but we are that. Our spiritual individuality, unlike our ego, does not preclude our universality and transcendence. But at present, the soul, or self, in us, intent on individualization in nature, allows itself to be confused with the idea of the ego. It has to get rid of this ignorance. It has to know itself as a reflection, or portion, or being of the supreme and universal self, and solely a center of its consciousness in the world action. But this Jiva Purusha too is not the doer of works any more than the ego or the supporting consciousness of the witness and knower. Again, and always, it is the transcendent and universal Shakti who is the sole doer. But behind her is the one supreme, who manifests through her as the dual power, Purusha Prakriti, Ishwara Shakti. Ishwara Shakti is not quite the same as Purusha Prakriti, for Purusha and Prakriti are separate powers. But Ishwara and Shakti contain each other. Ishwara is Purusha who contains Prakriti and rules by the power of the Shakti within him. Shakti is Prakriti ensouled by Purusha, and acts by the will of the Ishwara, which is her own will, and whose presence in her movement she carries always with her. The Purusha Prakriti realization is of the first utility to the seeker on the way of works. For it is the separation of the conscient being and the energy, and the subjection of the being to the mechanism of the energy that are the efficient cause of our ignorance and imperfection. By this realization, the being can liberate himself from the mechanical action of the nature and become free and arrive at a first spiritual control over the nature. Ishwara Shakti stands behind the relation of Purusha Prakriti and its ignorant action and turns it to an evolutionary purpose. The Ishwara Shakti realization can bring participation in a higher dynamism and a divine working, and a total unity and harmony of the being in spiritual nature. The Supreme becomes dynamic as the Shakti, and is by her the sole originator and master of works in the universe. If this is the truth of works, the first thing the sadhaka has to do is to recoil from the egoistic forms of activity and get rid of the sense of an I that acts. He has to see and feel that everything happens in him by the plastic conscious or subconscious or sometimes superconscious automatism of his mental and bodily instruments, moved by the forces of spiritual, mental, vital, and physical nature. There is a personality on his surface that chooses and wills, submits and struggles, tries to make good in nature or prevail over nature. But this personality is itself a construction of nature, and so dominated, driven, determined by her that it cannot be free. It is a formation or expression of the self in her. It is a self of nature rather than a self of self, his natural and processive, not his spiritual and permanent being, a temporary constructed personality, not the true immortal person. It is that person that he must become. He must succeed in being inwardly quiescent, detach himself as the observer from the outer active personality, and learn the play of the cosmic forces in him by standing back from all blinding absorption in its turns and movements. Thus, calm, detached, a student of himself and a witness of his nature, he realizes that he is the individual soul who observes the works of nature, accepts tranquilly her results, and sanctions or withholds his sanction from the impulse to her acts. At present, this soul or Purusha is little more than an acquiescent spectator, influencing perhaps the action and development of the being by the pressure of its veiled consciousness. But for the most part, delegating its powers, or a fragment of them, to the outer personality. In fact, to nature. For this outer self is not Lord, but subject to her, Anisha. But once unveiled, it can make its sanction, or refusal, effective, become the master of the action, dictate sovereignly a change of nature. Even if for a long time, as the result of fixed association and past storage of energy, the habitual movement takes place independent of the Purusha's assent, and even if the sanctioned movement is persistently refused by nature for want of past habit, still he will discover that in the end his assent or refusal prevails, slowly with much resistance, or Quickly, with a rapid accommodation of her means and tendencies, she modifies herself and her workings in the direction indicated by his inner sight or volition. Thus he learns, in place of mental control or egoistic will, an inner spiritual control, which makes him master of the nature forces that work in him, and not their unconscious instrument or mechanic slave. Above and around him is the Shakti, the Universal Mother, and from her he can get all his inmost soul needs and wills, if only he has a true knowledge of her ways and a true surrender to the divine will in her. Finally, he becomes aware of that highest dynamic self within him and within nature, which is the source of all his seeing and knowing, the source of the sanction, the source of the acceptance, the source of the rejection. This is the Lord, the Supreme, the One in all, Ishwara Shakti, of whom his soul is a portion, a being of that being and a power of that power. The rest of our progress depends on our knowledge of the ways in which the Lord of Works manifests his will in the world and in us, and executes them through the transcendent and universal Shakti. The Lord sees in his omniscience the thing that has to be done. This seeing is his will. It is a form of creative power, and that which he sees, the all-conscious mother, one with him, takes into her dynamic self and embodies. And executive nature force carries it out as the mechanism of their omnipotent omniscience. But this vision of what is to be, and therefore of what is to be done, arises out of the very being, pours directly out of the consciousness and delight of existence of the Lord, spontaneously, like light from the sun. It is not our mortal attempt to see, our difficult arrival at truth of action and motive, or just a demand of nature. When the individual soul is entirely at one in its being and knowledge with the Lord, and directly in touch with the original Shakti, the transcendent mother, the Supreme Will can then arise in us too, in the high divine manner, as a thing that must be and is achieved by the spontaneous action of nature. There is then no desire, no responsibility, no reaction. All takes place in the peace, calm, light, power of the supporting and enveloping and inhabiting divine. But even before that highest approach to identity is achieved, something of the Supreme Will can manifest in us as an imperative impulsion, a God-driven action. We then act by a spontaneous, self-determining force, but a fuller knowledge of meaning and aim arises only afterwards. Or the impulse to action may come as an inspiration or intuition, but rather in the heart and body than in the mind. Here an effective sight enters in, but the complete and exact knowledge is still deferred and comes, if at all, later. But the divine will may descend too as a luminous single command, or a total perception, or a continuous current of perception of what is to be done into the will, or into the thought, or as a direction from above, spontaneously fulfilled by the lower members. When the yoga is imperfect, only some actions can be done in this way, or else a general action may so proceed, but only during periods of exaltation and illumination. When the yoga is perfect, all action becomes of this character. We may indeed distinguish three stages of a growing progress by which, first, the personal will is occasionally or frequently enlightened, are moved by a supreme will or conscious force beyond it, then constantly replaced and last identified and merged in that divine power action. The first is the stage when we are still governed by the intellect, heart, and senses. These have to seek or wait for the divine inspiration and guidance, and do not always find or receive it. The second is the stage when human intelligence is more and more replaced by a high illumined or intuitive spiritualized mind, the external human heart by the inner psychic heart, the senses by a purified and selfless vital force. The third is the stage when we rise even above spiritualized mind to the supramental levels. In all three stages, the fundamental character of the liberated action is the same. A spontaneous working of prakriti no longer through or for the ego, but at the will and for the enjoyment of the supreme purusha. At a higher level, this becomes the truth of the absolute and universal supreme expressed through the individual soul and worked out consciously through the nature. No longer through a half perception and a diminished or distorted effectuation by the stumbling, ignorant, and all-deforming energy of lower nature in us, but by the all-wise, transcendent, and universal Mother. The Lord has veiled Himself and His absolute wisdom and eternal consciousness in ignorant nature force and suffers her to drive the individual being with its complicity as the ego. This lower action of nature continues to prevail, often even in spite of man's half-lit, imperfect efforts at a nobler motive and a purer self-knowledge. Our human effort at perfection fails, or progresses very incompletely, owing to the force of nature's past actions in us, her past formations, her long-rooted associations. It turns towards a true and high-climbing success only when a greater knowledge and power than our own breaks through the lid of our ignorance and guides or takes up our personal will. For our human will is a misled and wandering ray that has parted from the supreme puissance. The period of slow emergence out of this lower working into a higher light and purer force is the valley of the shadow of death for the striver after perfection. It is a dreadful passage, full of trials, sufferings, sorrows, obscurations, stumblings, errors, pitfalls. To abridge and alleviate this ordeal, or to penetrate it with the divine delight, faith is necessary, an increasing surrender of the mind to the knowledge that imposes itself from within, and above all, a true aspiration, and a right and unfaltering and sincere practice. Practice unfalteringly, says the Gita, with a heart free from despondency, the yoga. For even though in the earlier stage of the path, we drink deep of the bitter poison of internal discord and suffering, the last taste of this cup is the sweetness of the nectar of immortality and the honey wine of an eternal Ananda. Page 220, end of chapter 8, The Supreme Will.